I'm sorry. Are we on now? Thanks. Good afternoon, everybody. It is the Thursday, May 8th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules. We'd like to welcome Patricia Nielsen, who is filling in for Pam Cox today. Welcome. And next Tuesday, per the request of the senators from Malala and Jacksonville, we are going to be moving to hearing room B, since they like the temperature and the decor in that hearing room, as opposed to staying in here. So, as of next Tuesday, we'll be meeting in hearing room B, and I believe during the month of May, we will only be meeting on Tuesdays.
I've always thought of them as sensitive New Age guys, Madam Chair.
Me too, Senator Corcoran. Senator Florida?
I just wanted to comment that when requested, anything that's requested, the co-chairs do make accommodations for
yes.
the members.
Tuesdays in May, I'm assuming, because of the Health Policy Committee, is that what's happening? Okay.
We're not sure. We don't know. But check your schedules before you come on Thursdays during the month of May. Mr. Stembridge, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 706. A work session on Senate Bill 706.
Senate Bill 706 prohibits persons other than signers of initiative, referendum, or recall petitions from writing the required information on the petition signature sheet. You have a -1 amendment that provides exemption for persons with a disability who request assistance.
Thank you. I believe we've received written testimony from Kathy Eaton, who is the government coordinator for the League of Women Voters. Thank you, Kathy, for your testimony. Are there any discussion about this particular measure? We heard the measure several weeks ago.
Which measure are you on, Madam Chair?
Senate Bill 706.
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Any questions or comments?
Are you in a work session?
We are in a work session.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
I have not heard one yet.
Madam Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
I would move Senate Bill 706.
Can you set a form?
Is there an amendment?
That's amendment.
Is
dash one.
Madam Chair, I pull back the motion.
Senator Atkinson, you'd like to move the dash one amendment. Is that correct?
Madam Co-Chair, the dash one amendment provides exemption for persons with a disability who request assistance.
Makes it a little bit better.
Madam Chair, I move the dash one amendment.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson has moved the dash one amendments. Are there any comments about the dash one amendments? Senator Burdick.
I think the dash one amendments are a positive addition to this bill to make sure that we're not wrapping in the wrong people into this process. I think this bill is designed to curb abuses of the initiative system, and I think it will go a long way to do that. And this dash one amendment provides an appropriate provision for people who are disabled and can't sign their own addresses.
Thank you, Senator Burdick. Senator Barr, did you wish to make a comment about the dash one amendment?
It makes the bad bill a little bit better.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Barr. We appreciate your positive feedback. I'm feeling a little sensitive because one of the party committees put out a note saying the best committee chair was Senator Corcoran because he had a better sense of humor than some of the rest of us, so I'm trying to lighten things up here. I don't know if it was a mailing, Senator Beyer. Yes. Senator Atkinson has moved the dash one amendments. Is there any objection to the dash one amendments? Hearing and seeing none, it is so ordered. Senator Atkinson.
I move the bill as amended.
Senator Atkinson would move Senate Bill 706 to the Senate floor as amended with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
That bill should die.
Would you like to object, Senator Beyer?
Just vote no quietly. That's okay with you.
Okay. Senator Beyer is registered an objection. Is there any other objections? Hearing and seeing none, there's a majority and the bill is passed. Thank you. Senator Atkinson, would you like to carry the bill? Great. Thank you. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 678 with the same comments. Ms. Kathy Eatman has submitted written testimony on this particular measure. Mr. Stembridge, what is this bill?
Senate Bill 678 requires circulators of initiative referendum and recall petition sheets to certify that the circulator witnessed the signing of each signature on that sheet.
Thank you, Mr. Stembridge. Are there any amendments to this bill?
I have no amendments.
Okay. Comments, questions, suggestions, or motions? Senator Atkinson. Senator Corcoran. Thank you. Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill 678 to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection to that motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. There is an objection.
Thank you, Senator Beyer. Is there any other objections? Hearing and seeing none, Senator Beyer will be recorded as a no vote on Senate Bill 678, and with that, it has received a majority and is moving to the floor. Senator Devlin, would you like to carry Senate Bill 678? Thank you. Senator Beyer? Oh, okay. Thank you.
Notes for you.
Thank you,
Pastor. Thank you. I'm going to leave it. You want me to pass it now? Okay.
Anybody?
I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 279. I understand that Representative Diane Rosenbaum is here. Would you like to come forward to testify on this bill?
Madam Co-Chair, Senate Bill 279 limits the compensation of video lottery game retailers 50% of net receipts.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and I am Diane Rosenbaum, representing House District 42, and I'm very pleased that you have scheduled Senate Bill 279 for a hearing, and I'm glad that you are giving me an opportunity to talk about it. I, in fact, had introduced a very similar, in fact, I think probably identical bill on the House side, which has not gone anywhere, so it's great that we're having an opportunity to discuss this. This, and I should submit my written testimony.
And while you're doing that, I did want to inform committee members that Brenda Rockland from the Oregon Lottery is here in the event there is any questions. Where are you? Okay, thank you. She's not planning to testify, but she's available for any questions that the committee may have. Thanks for being here today. Sorry, Diane.
Yes, thank you again. You are now receiving my written testimony. But I want to say to start off that this session, as everybody here and everybody in the room knows, is all about TEP choices about cutting days off the school year, increasing class size, whether we're going to be able to pay for medicine for very seriously ill people, whether seniors are going to be able to stay in their homes. And these are all choices that we wish that we didn't have to make. And it's also about sacrifices, and we hear a lot about who's being asked to sacrifice, whether it's our public employees, whether it's our children in school, our seniors, all sorts of groups are being asked to make sacrifices. The good thing about Senate Bill 279 is instead of those negative things, it's actually talking about a solution that will make it easier to deal with some of the tough choices that we're being faced with. And that is by proposing a way to add more money into this budget to avert some of the painful choices we're being made. In fiscal year 2002, the state of Oregon paid $153.7 million in video poker tavern commissions to over 1,900 taverns. And that was actually an increase over 2001 when the figure was $147.5 million. The average video poker tavern takes in $75,000 a year in lottery commissions. The average commission rate is 32%. And more than one in four of these bars and other establishments with video poker is taking in more than $100,000 in the last fiscal year. And we believe when we're talking about sacrifice and when we're talking about accountability that this is one place that we really need to take a hard look, because we think that if these kinds of figures made sense before, and I think that there's some reason to think that maybe they did not, that they really don't make sense now in this time of budget crisis and real austerity. We simply can't afford to be this generous anymore with public funds, and we need, and the taxpayers expect us, to be accountable for every penny that they're sending, and likewise to scrutinize every penny that we're giving back, and that's what we're doing in the form of these commissions. So how can we justify to those same taxpayers that we're subsidizing bars and taverns and that that is more important than cutting days off the school year or throwing disabled people out of care homes? The current contracts with these taverns will run out in June of 2004, and so this is clearly the right time to be talking about this and looking at this. And if money could be raised by cutting these commissions, it would be available in the second half of this biennium that we're currently struggling with. So this bill has the potential to save over $75 million a year. Now, I think you may hear that the businesses that have these contracts were relying on these funds, but it should be no secret to them, and it should not have been when they purchased their business, that these contracts run out. You know, there's been a lot of discussion about contracts in this building and that they aren't necessarily forever, but these contracts had a very definite expiration time. They were going to be renegotiated. They always were going to be renegotiated in June of 2004. So that should come as no surprise. And you will hear from other witnesses who are experts on this about what would the effect would be of reducing this commission to the rate contained in this bill, that these businesses could still make a very healthy profit if they receive 15% of net sales, and the costs associated with having the machines, we believe, are minimal. And you will hear about audits and reports that have been done that demonstrate that. But I think you'll hear from opponents that this bill really wouldn't raise any money because if it went through, they would either drop the games or the businesses themselves would go out of business. And to that, we say if that's the case, then you have to question what we're doing with video poker to begin with. If we have establishments that are only in business because they're providing a place for gambling, then they're probably in violation of other statutes that prohibit having the dominant purpose or dominant use of these businesses being gambling. That basically makes them casinos rather than restaurants or bars or whatever else they're doing. So we don't think that that holds up either. We think that the time is now. This has to be considered. The people expect us to be looking under every rock for money. This is one place that we can look without doing damage. We can fund our schools, we can help our seniors, and we think that the time is right to move Senate Bill 279, and we thank you for your consideration.
Thank
I would
you
be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Rosenbaum. Anybody have questions?
I'm seeing
thank
none.
You. Thanks for joining us today. Next up, and I'll do this in panels, Steve Novick and Joe Courtright.
Before they speak, I would just like to make a couple comments, but go ahead and
okay,
talk.
Okay, and then is it on deck? Right, yes, the next would be on deck. Bill Perry, Michael Mills, and Connie Hunt. Senator Corcoran, come on up here.
And who's in the hold?
Jacqueline Zimmer and Marcia Kelly, and then next panel would be Ginny Van Loo and Grover Simmons.
Okay.
Senator Corcoran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make a couple of general comments since I'm the sponsor of this bill. One is that I'm not wed particularly to the across-the-board aspect of it in terms of the 15%. I approach this more from the aspect of seeing that there is about $140 million a year that is paid in video poker commissions to about 1,900 taverns, and this is done in the context of a state which has witnessed at least the one suicide here in Salem, where the young man on mental health medications that ran out because of medically needy program blew his brains out in the mental health unit at Salem Hospital, It's in the context of another man who we took off the medically needy program in Portland, who had a seizure condition and ended up in an intensive care unit, brain dead. It's in the context of shutting down during the special sessions 4 of the 5 Oregon youth facilities. And it comes in the context of taking 875 kids out of Head Start. So I'm not saying basically that we should squeeze every nickel out of these commissions, but I do think that while all the rest of government is being asked, we just took $667 million dollars out of public employees' pockets today, out of their retirement plan. I think in that context, we need to look at the fact that these particular amounts are too high. And in 1994, both the Secretary of State and Mr. Courtright, the economist who's here today, completed studies that concluded that video lottery retailers would still be making at least as strong a profit as they do on their core business if commissions were reduced to 10 or 15%. The Lottery Commission ignored those studies when they renewed the contracts in 1998. The goal of Senate Bill 279 is simply to set a rate that will fulfill a statutory mandate to the lottery. Current contracts do run out in June of 2004, so if there is money raised by cutting commissions, it would be available in the second half of this biennium. So with that, I'll let Mr. Courtright discuss his study and then have Mr. Novick discuss his review of the record for the lottery's 1998 rate setting proceeding.
Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Brown, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Joe Courtright. I'm a consulting economist in Portland, Oregon. My firm works with businesses and governments around the United States on issues of public finance and economic development policy. And while that is my professional capacity, I'm here today testifying on my own behalf and not on behalf of my firm or any of its clients. For 12 years, from 1983 to 1995, I had the pleasure of working as staff to legislative committees. In fact, the committee I work for, Trade and Economic Development Committee, met in this very room for a number of years, in fact, when it was dealing with the legislation that authorized video poker. In fact, I'm really pleased to see that some of the seats that we sat on are at least still in this room. I heard that you've done away with some of the old furniture.
Thanks.
Well, you know, economist is a synonym for cheapskate, so, you know, in that vein. In any event, when I worked for the legislature, when I worked for the Trade and Economic Development Committee, and one other committee that I'll tell you about, we were the statutory committee of the legislature that had primary responsibility for the oversight of the lottery and its operations, and both during the legislative interim and during the legislative session, and handled at least on one side of the building and occasionally on both sides of the building the legislation that affected the state lottery. And during the 1993-95 legislative interim, I served as staff to the Joint Legislative Task Force on Lottery Oversight. And that task force was set up after the initial implementation of the video lottery games. And the task force was really directed at looking at the lottery, and one of the questions it was investigating was whether the lottery was carrying out its constitutional and statutory responsibilities to maximize revenue as a revenue raising agency of state government. And following up specifically on a bit of the legislative history that you might be aware of, which is that when the video lottery games were authorized, the lottery director indicated that they weren't sure what level of commissions they would set, but they would continually review the operations of the lottery and the profitability of retailers and adjust the commissions to maximize the state's share. Now, the lottery commissions were originally set prior to the initiation of the video lottery games, and the lottery commission chose the number of 35% of net receipts. It did so without any prior analysis of the operating costs for individual retailers. But it estimated that the typical retailer would see sales of about $400 per video lottery terminal per week. And almost immediately after the games were initiated, the level of average sales for the video lottery machines, in fact, doubled to about $800 per machine per week. So right off the bat, the level of receipts that the retailers were making and on which the lottery had computed its 35% return was double. And I think that raised some concerns on the part of our task force. And the task force asked me to prepare an economic analysis of what the actual costs of operating the games were. We studied the internal records and reports generated by the state lottery and by its consultants, and we also observed the operations of video lottery retailers. And in February of 1994, and this is ancient history now, I appreciate, we prepared this report for the legislative task force on the question of whether those video lottery commissions maximize net state revenue. Based on our analysis, we concluded that the 35% level of commissions was about 2 to 3 times higher than the amount that was necessary to induce the retailers to carry the games, and that at that time the state could realize about $120 million more per biennium. If it set the level of commissions at about the same level that it set for other games, such as Keno and scratch-off tickets. Our key findings were that the lottery commission, video lottery commissions, substantially exceed the commissions paid to other retailers, and they're in fact about 2 to 3 times as high as what retailers get paid to carry Keno and other games. We also concluded that retailer commissions would substantially increase net revenues, and that they would not that reducing the commissions even to the level of 10%, which is somewhat lower than is contemplated in this legislation, wouldn't change the incentives fundamentally to retailers to keep the games. First of all, because players would face the same odds, and this is a game that's being driven by players, and that only a very small number of retailers, those with extremely low volumes given the cost structure, would no longer find it more profitable to get rid of the games than it would be to keep them. We carefully examined all of the data on the operation of different video lottery retailers, and we concluded that that the games themselves were extremely profitable to those retailers, that they increased profits in the typical bar and tavern on the order of 60 to 240% as a result of adding video lottery games. We also looked carefully at the assumptions that were used in the data that was prepared for the Lottery Commission, and concluded that they had significantly overstated the direct labor costs to the lottery retailers. As Senator Corcoran mentioned, our statistics and our findings were confirmed by a separate audit of the lottery that was undertaken by the Secretary of State's auditors. And to my knowledge, nobody's produced an independent study that contradicts the findings that we made then. And I've reviewed some of the subsequent work that's been done. The Lottery Commission, KPMG, a major accounting firm, to look at this issue of retailer commissions in 1997. They reported that they had enormous difficulty in getting reliable information about retailer costs. Only about 10% of retailers responded to a survey asking for cost information, and they reported that the information that they did get from retailers indicated that most retailers didn't really have accurate accounting information on how much the games were costing them. But based on their analysis, they concluded, that is KPMG concluded, that the profit margins in that game were on the order of about 50 to 75%, which, while somewhat lower than the numbers we produced, it are generally consistent with the results that we arrived at. Now, the one thing that I would just reflect on is that one of the key questions that I think you face in this challenge, as well as in a lot of others, is figuring out what the right price is to pay for something. What is a fair and just price? And as an economist, we usually like to point to markets and say, is there a market price that you can pay? And in the public sector, the way you try and take advantage of market prices is by putting things out to competitive bids. And one of the things that I would note for you is that this is a situation in which this particular service has never been put out to competitive bid. You don't know what the market price is for the operation of video lottery terminals. Now, it would be possible to arrange for a public bidding on these and get the market price. The federal government does it, for example, with telecommunications spectrum and assures that the public gets a fair rate of return for the service that it's procuring. So if you are interested in reforming this, you have several options. You can set a rate that is somewhat lower than the current rate. You could also put it out to bid. But either way, there are a lot of opportunities for getting additional public revenue from this and doing so in a way that fairly compensates retailers.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Novick, and I'm the legislative coordinator for the Department of Education. My boss, Superintendent Castillo, has an interest in this issue because she has an interest in adequate funding for Oregon's public schools, and she believes that reducing video lottery retailer commissions would make a significant contribution towards adequate school funding. I personally happen to have some knowledge on this issue because about 3 years ago, I was involved in a short-lived effort to put an initiative on the ballot to reduce commissions to 15%, as Senator Corcoran has proposed. I actually was initially quite skeptical of this suggestion when I first heard it, because I assumed that the lottery had hired professionals to go out and carefully collect and analyze a lot of data and arrive at a rate structure that, quote, maximizes the net revenue to the state for the public purpose, end quote, as required by ORS 461.445. But then I started reading information about this commission structure. I read Mr. Cartwright's report, which he summarized. I read the audit by the Secretary of State, completed shortly after Mr. Cartwright's report, which he referred to. And the Secretary of State concluded, here's the audit, concluded, and I quote, that lowering the commission rate to 10% resulted in profit margins that exceed the average for the restaurant industry, alcoholic beverage industry, and small businesses. And then the audit concluded that for every 1% reduction in retailer commission, the Oregon State Lottery could generate annually up to $2.4 million more for public purposes. All other factors held constant. That's based on the amount of money flowing through the system in 94. Then I reviewed the record of decision for the lottery's 1998 rate-setting exercise, which I have here. Startling thing about this record is that there's no reference whatsoever in it to either Mr. Cartwright's study or the Secretary of State's audit, and as if those two documents do not exist. The lottery did review this study completed by KPMG Pete Marwick, which Mr. Cartwright referred to, and this study is nowhere near as extensive as Mr. Cartwright's, but KPMG sent out surveys to some retailers, got a few of them back, and concluded that most of the video lottery retailers did not provide valid cost information, but they found that the most relevant range of cost for those retailers that did present data that could be substantiated was a range of 25 to 50% of revenue. So their costs were 25 to 50% of their revenue. Now, the lottery itself, their staff, prepared a summary of information gathered at hearings, which is in your packets, and their summary is consistent with this finding. The staff stated that, quote, high-volume retailers have a hard time presenting any additional cost data associated with supporting video other than increased payroll expenses associated with counting money. That's on page 8 of their summary analysis. So, how much does it cost to count money? Well, on that point, we have the testimony of Michael Mills, representing the Oregon Restaurant Association, who testified before the Lottery Commission in the 1998 rate-setting proceeding. Mr. Mills testified that a, quote, top retailer has to remove $1 billion a year of lottery money from their machines. And he said that, quote, if that were counted at the rate of $1 per second, it would take over 34 working days, 8-hour days, to count it. Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, get out your calculators. If the typical tavern employee makes $7 an hour, 34 days times 8 hours times $7 is $1,904. Even assuming the tavern employees make $10 an hour and receive health benefits, we're talking about maybe $4,000 a year in labor expenses, and this is something the Restaurant Association has identified as a major cost item for a high-volume retailer, presumably somebody making more than the average of $75,000 per year. You'd expect that presented with this evidence, given its statutory obligation to maximize revenue, the lottery would have dramatically changed the rate structure in 1998. Instead, if you look at the record, the lottery essentially threw up its hands and said, well, some people are making outrageous profits, so we'll establish a 25% rate for sales between $400,000 and $600,000 and a 20% rate for sales over $600,000. But that doesn't make much difference because there are very few retailers that are up in the stratosphere like that. So today, the average commission rate is about 33%, which is what a retailer making about $120,000 in commissions would be getting. Based on the evidence, the Lottery Commission has not fulfilled its statutory obligation to maximize revenue for the state. And Senate Bill 279 is consistent with Mr. Courtright's and the Secretary of State's finding that the commission rate of 10% to 15% would generate significant additional revenue for the state while allowing a reasonable rate of return for the retailers. Thank you.
Questions?
Chair.
Senator Burdick.
Since you pointed out that we are statutorily required to have contracts that maximize revenue to the states, do you think there's any justification for either putting the current contracts aside, either through court action or by legislative action, given the data and facts that were presented in Mr. Courtright's studies and others?
Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, that's an interesting question. I mean, it seems like there's no way that these contracts fulfill the lottery's obligation to maximize revenue. So it would seem at first blush that might make the contracts vulnerable, although I'm not speaking as a contract lawyer, I'm not one. Now, it may be that you just want to give the retailers some time to adjust any new rate structure, but you also may want to ask the Attorney General the question you just asked.
Senator Burdick? Go ahead. Mr. Courtright, if you wish to respond as well, that's fine.
Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, and not as an attorney either, but just in matter of legislative history in terms of the legislature's intent in this legislation and what they were told by the director of the lottery in 1991 when they were contemplating this issue was that the lottery commission would continually, and use that word, study retailer profits and adjust rates accordingly, quote, to maximize the state's share. So that even prior to the contracting, the legislative history was that these would be adjusted to maximize the state's revenue.
And just to follow up, Madam Chair, you know, I've been talking to people on all sides of this issue, and they say, well, it's kind of a chicken and egg thing or goose. I don't want to get into birds here. We've done enough of that today. But what is your response to the argument that if you lower commissions, that people won't want to do this, and you are in effect killing the goose that laid the golden egg?
Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, nobody wants to kill geese that lay golden eggs. But the evidence here demonstrates that these geese are obese and that they would lay even more golden eggs if we simply put them on a diet.
Yeah, and
I'm speechless now.
Mr. Courtright, did you want to...
Madam Chair, Senator Burke, I'm sure I can't be as colorful as Mr. Novick, but I would point out that the question that confronts a lottery retailer, a video lottery retailer, if the commissions are reduced, is whether they should keep the games or give them up. Now, if you look at the actual experience of lottery retailers, we are currently compensating Keno retailers at one-third the rate that for the essentially the same kind of activities that we're compensating video lottery retailers. Keno continues to be a game that retailers are happy to carry. In fact, many of the people who carry video lottery also carry Keno. Similarly, if you look at the video lottery retailers themselves, there are about 100 extremely low-volume retailers. That is, video retailers who get less than $5,000 a year in video lottery commissions. Now, if you accept the cost studies that have been done, all those people should be losing money. But, I mean, if you accept the arguments about how much it costs to run these games. But they find it economical to keep those games, even though they're getting as little as $5,000 a year in commission. Again, it's a very negligible cost to the retailer to keep the games. And while they would be getting less money, they would clearly be better off to keep them, even at a lower level of commissions, than they would be to turn them back to the state.
Thank you. Any questions?
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Breyer.
I guess I'm curious, the last statement you made that and somebody's handout here has a listing of pages 1 through 3 of payouts and then 49, 48 through 51. And you made a statement that the retailers that are getting less than $5,000 a year, you would think they'd all turn them back. How do you know they're making a profit?
Madam Chair and Senator Beyer, the fact that what in economics we call revealed preference, the fact that they keep the games and don't turn them back. I mean, if in fact $5,000 a year was not enough to cover the full cost of the game, after 12 years, you would expect nobody no retailers to take the games at that level if they were losing money. But year after year, when we looked at the lottery in 1994, via lottery in 1994, there were very low volume retailers today. There were very low volume retailers today. The existence of those tells you that they are making money. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing it. They couldn't exist.
Madam Chair, I guess I'd argue that they may be there because they attract customers, and maybe they're making money on selling beer or peanuts or something like that. There's no evidence here that someone who's doing this is making what the statute says requires a reasonable rate of return for contractors. So to limit people who are making this kind of money to 15%, do you think that would fulfill the statutory requirement that these contractors are making a reasonable rate of return?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, you make an excellent point, which is that the existence of lottery games in these facilities is an attraction to customers, and it enables the people who operate those kinds of establishments and have those games to attract additional customers to their establishment and sell other things to them. None of the studies of lottery commissions that have been done have considered the added benefit to the retailer. So we've always restricted ourselves to just the issue of the game. So not only do they make money on the lottery games, they get the added benefit of the traffic that's generated from them. But to answer your question about whether that's fair and reasonable, again, you know, as an economist, the way we assess fair and reasonable is what's a market price for that. We don't have a market price. We have a price that's been set by bureaucratic fiat. We've said it's 35%. And we don't know what the real market price is, which would be the fair price. Now, if you auction this off, and there are a number of ways to structure an auction for this, you could discover what the fair market price is. And our evidence suggests that it would be a lot lower than it currently is.
I'd actually like to follow up on Senator Beyer's question. I think what troubles me about a simple drop in percentage is that we have the first two on the list making a substantial amount of dollars and the last two on the list not making very much. To just simply cut to the little guys at the end of the list doesn't seem fair to me. Would you suggest another approach?
Madam Chair, it would certainly be possible to amend Senate Bill 279 slightly to provide, for that matter, that the retailers get 50% of the first $5,000 and 14% of any amount after that. However, as Mr. Cordwright has indicated, I mean, even retailers that only make a couple of $1,000s a year have found it profitable to keep the games, in part because probably they do attract other business. But certainly you could continue to have a tiered rate structure such as the lottery has now, but just have more steeply graduated tiers.
Any further questions for the panel? Senator Atkinson.
No, I'll just reiterate your question too, because I'm going through your highlighting all of my district. And under what you just said, wouldn't you be setting up two different standards? You'd be punishing businesses that are successful and not those who are not, but attracting other sales?
Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson, actually you could argue that the current structure does that because there's this 20% rate that kicks in at $600,000. However, I mean, it's sort of up to, I mean, I think that there's a strong argument that a reasonable rate of return, as Mr. Cordwright suggested, in a capitalist society is whatever a merchant is willing to accept. And there's merchants willing to accept $2,000 to have these machines in their possession, and if you cut the commissions in half for everybody, then you find out if there's some that are willing to accept it at $1,000. I think it's simply a matter of, you know, what the legislature thinks is, or the commission thinks are fair in the context of maximizing revenue. But the statutory mandate, and I think that the constitutional presumption, is that you set up commission rates which maximize revenue for the state. And you could play with the lower end of the spectrum without having much effect on the overall revenue, but without affecting the really tiny retailers' profits.
Madam Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
Maybe a question for the panel, just for staff. I don't know. Not much into gambling per se, but what's the cost to get into one of these machines? What's the upfront cost to the business?
Mr. Cartwright actually may have a sense of that. I don't know.
I'm afraid I don't know the current. When we looked at it, the Lottery Commission bought the games and continue to operate them. There was an application fee that they paid, that the tavern owner would pay, and there was an amount that they would pay for telecommunications services. But the cost of the machines themselves was borne by the lottery. The lottery folks could probably answer the current number.
Ms. Rockland and Ms. Seelock are here, and they may be able to answer that. So, thank you. Do you want to get that information? Or do you want to hand
I don't need that.
Okay.
I'm sure Bill can probably.
Mr. Perry, Mr. Mills, and Ms. Hunt, come forward and welcome. How are you?
How are you?
Good. Welcome.
Thank you.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, I'll kick off this panel for the record. My name is Bill Perry. I am Director of Government Relations for the Oregon Restaurant Association. We represent about 3,000 restaurants. About 700 of those are video lottery retailers of the 1,900. I will say that I want to kind of address what I am calling three myths. First of all, the law does not say, as Senator Beyer pointed out, that you should pay retailers as little as you can and get away with. The law says that you have to pay these people a reasonable rate of return. And as you look at my testimony, it talks about there's a tiered approach that as you make more money for the state, you get less money. It also shows the other states that have video lottery. And what this shows is Oregon retailers get the smallest percentage commission rate of any of the states that have video lottery. And the state gets the highest cut of any of the states that have video lottery. We talked about where the tiered commission started in 1995. In 1995, when you're just talking about net dollars, the state got 50%, the lottery got 15% in administration, and the retailers got 35%. As the tiers have gone and sales have gone up, the retailer's commission has continued to decline every year since then. Last year in 2002, the state got 55%, the lottery got 13%, and the retailer got 32%. That's a 5% increase for the state, a 2% decrease for the lottery, and a 3% decrease for lottery retailers. Okay. Second myth is that cutting commission rates is going to get you more money. First of all, as Senator Corcoran pointed out and others, you're not going to do anything for a year because we're under current contract. The second point is that why Mr. Courtright and Mr. Novak's testimony is compelling, they're not revenue forecasters. The revenue committee every year gets an analysis of what you can do to make different monies for the state, taxes, line games, everything else. This was addressed. And the revenue committee was given a report that says cutting commission rates does not net the state more money. I'm going to repeat that. To the revenue committee in the legislature, both House and Senate, it was said that cutting commission rates is not going to net you more money. Okay. I think the third myth is that lottery is a slush fund. Okay, lottery is no more a slush fund for us as it is for you guys. It started out lottery for you guys was economic development. It's no longer economic development. Both the state and retailers borrow against this money. You do it in bonds. We do it in loans for buying businesses or enhancing our current businesses. Both of us, the state and the retailers, use it for operational purposes. You guys do it for schools and other programs. We do it for employment and benefits. Both of us, including the state and the retailers, use it for capital improvements and economic development in our communities. So, if you cut commission rates to retailers, I don't care if a retailer makes $10,000 or $200,000, you're putting at risk loans, defaulting on loans, whether they be bonds or loans to individual businesses. You're putting at risk employment, benefits, and other programs. And you're basically putting at risk future economic development. Our guys are trying to expand their businesses and doing everything else like you guys. You are putting that at risk because I don't care how much a retailer makes, whether it's $5, $10, or $200,000, that is in their operational costs for now and in the future. The same way it is for you guys. If we went into the lottery right now and cut, what equivalent to 56% out of the lottery funds, for the state, you would be facing the same choices that a retailer would be making if you cut their income by 56%.
So, Mr. Perry?
Yes.
In essence, what you're saying is that the lottery sales in the restaurant and tavern business subsidizes the underlying restaurant and tavern business.
Chair Brown and members of the committee, yes, I would say I don't think that everybody does beer sales, food sales, and entertainment sales. This falls in entertainment sales. This is when you set out your budget plan, you put all your revenues in a basket, you hire people, you go off capital improvements and everything else, and yeah, it plays into the mix. There isn't like a separate account that just sit out there that you pull money off of.
Okay, thank you.
So by cutting this, by cutting commission rates, you're putting a lot at risk for both of us. I do not feel Senate Bill 275 does anybody any good or helps anybody in this time.
Thank you.
Senator Burdick. Thank you. You mentioned reasonable rate of return.
Mm-hmm.
If you could, and I'm sure there are ways to figure this out, the cost of maintaining the machine or having an employee to watch over the machine or do whatever you do particular to that machine in a mm-hmm. tavern, what would you consider a reasonable rate of return? Percentage-wise.
Senator Burdick and members of the committee, Senator Brown, that's totally going to be dependent on the establishment. That's just like saying somebody that's an attorney in Portland, what are they paying for square footage in an office building and what do you pay in Burns? The cost of each individual business is going to be a lot. I mean, yeah, there's phone lines, there's separate bank accounts, there's a lot of different things you need. You also have to service these machines, you have to service the customers, you're talking about square footage, how much... there wasn't just this building that sat vacant. I'm taking out tables. I'm taking out pool tables. I'm doing something else. I'm taking out revenue that I had and putting in a machine for the state. So there's a lot of things that go into just opening a business. There's a roof. There's a building. There's employees. There's a lot of...
I understand all that, mm-hmm. but the statute says that we maximize the revenue for the state and provide a reasonable rate of return. And that is a quantifiable measure. And probably one of the problems that we're facing here is that we don't, to my knowledge, we don't have rules anywhere that say what is a reasonable rate of return and what are the factors that go into it. But if you had any other capital, expenditure, if you had any other feature, you could quantify what is a reasonable rate of return. And I'm just trying to get from you a sense of what would be reasonable in terms of the actual rate of return, costs offset by revenues.
And I will say, Chair Burdick and members, I do know that Mike Mills is going to address that at the end, but I would just, when we say about market, I agree with the previous speakers that market does dictate it. And I would say us being the lowest in the country, cutting it in half, in my opinion, does not meet the market.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson.
Thank you.
And then I think we'll move on and hear the rest of the panel. We just like having you in front of us, Mr. Perry, so much.
Mr. Perry, you heard me on the other panel talking. I've been highlighting all my small...
Mm-hmm.
In your opinion, if you were to change the payout to 15% under this bill, what would happen to someone like the Sportsman's Tavern who makes $940?
Well, Senator Atkinson, Chair Brown, I think the same answer applies to Senator Berger's question. It's hard to tell from an individual establishment. I will say that there's a little bit different aspect from somebody starting out making a little bit amount to all of a sudden you paying somebody half the price. They're going to have to make cuts to make up for the revenue, whether it's cutting employees or anything else. But is anybody going to do it for half? And I did want to pose the statement when you look at it, because you guys would be in the same boat as us. There is objections to the lottery in the body right now, whether people would like to do away with it altogether. Okay, would the opinion of the body change if you dropped from $600 million in a biennium to $300 million in a biennium? I would argue that you are more likely to get rid of lottery as a state if all of a sudden next year you made half as much. And that is the same decision that a retailer makes, is if you're going to pay me half as much tomorrow, I'm more likely to get rid of it, or I'm going to cut to make up those expenses.
Thanks. Ms. Hunt.
Hi. My name is Connie Hunt. My husband Bob and I own the East Bank Saloon and Restaurant Company at 727 Southeast Grand Avenue in Portland, Oregon. 25 years ago.
Conveniently located in the district.
I know. I thought maybe you needed my address. I didn't know. 25 years ago, we turned a blighted building in a depressed neighborhood into a thriving business employing over 26 people. We've owned and operated two other bars and restaurants over the years, Pudgy's in Seaside, Oregon, and McCall's Waterfront Cafe in Portland, both of which we have sold. I'm here today to testify in opposition of Senate Bill 279, and here are my reasons why. First, I'd like to tell you where we personally spend our lottery revenue. Over 70% of our lottery profits go directly to our employees in the form of health insurance, benefits, and bonuses. Over the course of the last few years, we've been able to make some capital improvements on our property that we could not have otherwise done. We had a new weight station built by a local carpenter, purchased a new carpet from a family-owned business down the street, and bought a computer system from a family-owned business across the street. Those lottery dollars were invested back into our community. Like many folks in the hospitality industry, we bought and sold businesses. And like many other business owners, the sales were predicated on revenue dollars that included lottery figures. When we sold our bar and restaurant in Seaside, lottery revenue was a huge component in the purchase price equation. The couple that bought Pudgy's relies heavily on those lottery dollars to make their purchase payments. By reducing that revenue stream by half, they'll not be able to make their payments, and we will be forced to take the business back. And I can honestly tell you, and I mean this honestly, if we get that business back, we're not going to reopen it. At our respective ages, at time in our lives, we would put the property on the market, resulting in yet another business closure and loss of jobs. We are certainly not alone in this scenario. Our situation would be replicated across the state. Video poker adds a high level of risk, economic liability, and stress. I've included with my testimony a copy of an alert circulated to Southeast Portland area retailers, warning us about an armed robber targeting lottery retailers. The East Bank has been robbed twice, and when we owned McCall's, we were robbed 13 times in a month and a half, twice in one night. I think we broke a Portland police record. Our bartenders are the staff members responsible for customer service and on-premise maintenance for video poker, along with their other duties. And let me just add, contrary to what some other testimony you heard today referred to, there is nobody making $7 an hour that handles my video poker money. It's much, much more money out in personnel payroll that I pay those people that I have to trust to handle my video poker money. Now, we the retailers, let me just get back to the bartenders. They are the ones on the front line. They're running all the maintenance, handling the customers, making the payments. This sometimes frantic multitasking can result in errors and additional unrecovered losses. We are the retailers, and we are the ones personally liable to the state for any losses for any reason. For 25 years, we've done the right thing. We've created and operated a successful operation that the state is now utilizing to generate lottery dollars. Our contribution to video poker goes far beyond merely providing space. We create and maintain the customer base for this enterprise at great personal and emotional expense. I wonder what success the state might enjoy if forced to open its own establishments. The original purpose of lottery was economic development. We, the retailers, are now able to provide job growth and stability for our employees with living wage job opportunities and employee benefits. Our lottery dollars provide real neighborhood improvements and community development. Video poker is economic development for the little guy, like me. But more importantly, it's economic development benefiting my employees. Let me put a personal face on the state of my business very quickly. In the summer of 2001, because of a bridge closure next to the East Bank Saloon, I lost approximately 30% in gross sales. That means my business was cannibalizing itself. Just when we began to see a recovery, 9/11 hit. And as everyone knows, business has never quite been the same. January 2003, we were hit with a minimum wage increase. Since January 1, I've cut labor at 41 and a half hours per week, and I've only recovered about 50% of the loss from minimum wage. In Portland, we're facing one economic assault after another from local government. We're now facing a possible payroll tax in September. In conclusion, by reducing lottery commissions, businesses like mine all across the state will cut benefits, lay off more employees, and the worst-case scenario, close the businesses. Please tell me how to explain to the single mother of two working for me today why she will no longer receive employee benefits and, in fact, may no longer have a job. Thank you so much for letting me take this time with you.
Thanks for coming down. Mr. Mills?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, and Sponsor Corcoran. My name is Michael Mills. I'm a lawyer in private practice, and I've been so since 1972 in the Salem area. My offices are here in Salem. My practice includes representation of many businesses in the food and beverage industry, many of whom are video lottery retailers who will be directly affected by this proposed legislation. As I sat here and listened to the proponents of this legislation, I was struck by several things. First of all, that during their initial presentation, they made no mention of ORS 461.445 in its entirety. That was a bill passed in 1991 by the legislature that, in fact, gave the responsibility to the Oregon State Lottery Commission to undertake to develop a system that maximizes the net revenue to the state for the public purpose. But it has to be consistent with providing a reasonable rate of return for contractors. That's the statutory language. And as a lawyer who reads contracts and statutes, I would represent to you that both parts of that prong are equally important in the statutory directive that you gave to the lottery, maximizing the net revenue to the state and providing a reasonable rate of return for contractors. In response to Senator Burdick's question, what is a reasonable rate of return, the Lottery Commission has decided what is a reasonable rate of return. Another thing that struck me is that there seems to be a position on the part of the proponents that somehow the Lottery Commission has abdicated its responsibility over the last 12 or 13 years in fulfilling their constitutional and statutory mandate, and that's simply not true. They have developed a system that does both. And the reasonable rate of return to lottery contractors today is found in the current contract with a four-tier rate beginning at 35% and ending at 20%. And yes, there are not many top retailers in the top group pay the 20%, but they provide much or most of the lottery income to the state. And their effective rate of commissions is far less than the current average of 31.9. In some instances, it's under 25%. And when I say an effective rate, that means that's effectively what they receive on their total lottery commissions is under 25%. Now, former Commissioner Scarborough, I'm not sure if he's still here in the room or not, but we have participated over the years since the lottery started. I have been an advocate for both my clients and others, and we have literally participated in tens and tens of hours of public hearings, public participation in front of lottery review citizens committees, in front of the lottery commissioners, in front of hearings officers and panels, in an attempt to help the lottery commission develop this reasonable rate of return, and I believe that the Lottery Commission has done that. One of the other things that struck me is that there seems to be a great amount of cynicism towards the other half of the partnership, and the lottery state is the most successful public-private partnership that I'm aware of in the state of Oregon. You have taken literally a product and you have turned it into a product that not only satisfies the entertainment wishes of a great number of the citizens of Oregon, it provides a great deal of revenue, and it provides a reasonable rate of return to your lottery retailer partners. And I think that that's something that should be emphasized and that everyone should be proud of. I have collected over the years, and I have read each one of the reports that Mr. Courtright referred to and that Mr. Novak referred to, and there are some other reports too. It's interesting to note that after the Secretary of State's report of 1994 and Mr. Courtright's report of 1994, the Citizens Advisory Committee to the Lottery recommended to the lottery that the then current commission rates not be changed. And since those reports, the commissions have in fact been changed twice. In 1994, we went to a two-tier system of 35 and then 30%, and then in 1998, we again went to a four-tier system that I told you about. Yet, in spite of the history of the reports and the legislative mandate, some observers still emphasize the maximization of net revenues without taking into account the other side of the equation. And I think that you've given that responsibility to the lottery, and I believe that the lottery commissioners over the years have fulfilled that responsibility and have found that balance, and that balance is seen in the success of the partnership. And thank you for your attention.
Thanks. We appreciate you being here. Question for either Mr. Mills or Mr. Perry, and that is I had some private sector folks in to encourage me to pass legislation that would allow for a public bidding process in the DEQ system, the testing system for vehicles. I guess my question for you is this. Why not at least... I mean, we would probably, if we asked everyone in this room what a reasonable rate of return, you'd probably get as many different answers as there are people in the room. Why not open it up for a public or more of an open bidding process?
Well, first of all, I don't believe that the statutory and constitutional mandate would allow what I conceive as a public bidding process. It's just not set up that way. The Lottery Commission, both constitutionally and by the 1991 legislation, has been given the mandate to develop the system that balances the equation. If the Lottery Commission believed that, pursuant to their mandate, they could open a bidding process, I assume that they're free to do that, but you have to remember that there are certain underlying requirements that a video lottery retailer must have, and that is a liquor license and premises and things like that. And to me, it would be one of the most cumbersome, onerous, and complicated bidding processes or bid brochures that you could put together. How long do you then make it for? A year? Is somebody going to come in and take that bid on a year renewal contract basis and make the sometimes literally hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of purchases and investments that are necessary to get into the business? And that's another point. You don't get into the business of being a video lottery retailer by going down and filling out an application, paying a fee, and collecting up a few telephone lines. You've got to have a business that has a liquor license, that has ADA required spaces for the lottery people, that has bathrooms, all of the things that go on with that.
Thank you. Any other questions for this panel?
Madam Chairman.
Senator Burdick.
Well, we have a document in front of us that Senator Kleino and I have been going through here looking for appropriate names. You talk about reasonable rate of return. I'm still stumbling on that because it seems to be a very abstract term the way it's used. For example, you have the Freeloader Tavern in Marion County that had video net sales of $693,000, and they got video commissions. Their share of the commission was $199,000, almost $200,000 in commissions. Then you go down the list, and you go near the end, and you find the Between the Buns sandwich shop in Douglas County that had $12 in sales and got commissions of $4. Now, how can you take a, you know, what system can you use to say that both of those are reasonable? And, you know, to me, it would seem make much more sense to figure out some formula and figure out what percentage of sales would make a reasonable figure. And if you were to do that, what would that figure be?
Chair Brown, co-chair, members of the committee, and Senator Burdick. If I knew the answer to that question, I would probably be a lottery commissioner because the legislature gave those people that responsibility to develop the framework in the legislation. And we talk about reasonable rate of return when we talk about what the percentage of on the commission should be. And we have presented time after time in those hearings in front of the various committees and hearings people testimony regarding the time and motion studies that have been done regarding the amount of time and labor going into being a video lottery retailer, whether or not it should be a marginal cost allocation or a embedded cost. I'm not an economist, but they come up with the terms of how to allocate it. And depending on which economist you hire, you come up with a different view of what costs are to a video lottery retailer. And that's why the Lottery Commission functions as it does. They hear all that testimony, and then they carry out their mandate of trying to make that balance.
And Senator Burnick, Chair Brown, I would argue that the Freeloader Tavern in that instance is getting the short end of the stick. And I would say that just because a citizen panel and all the administrative rule processes has said the reasonable rate of return today is 35%. Okay? That's what the sandwich shop is getting, 35%. You've now got a high performer in that example that is not getting what the rule it says reasonable rate of return. It's getting 20%. And so your higher performer is getting less of a percentage. And so I would argue that they're not getting a reasonable rate of return on their investment.
But Madam Chairman, just to stick with this for a while, if usually when you
not too long, I hope.
Have an investment, you figure out how much it costs to maintain that investment, you figure out how much it costs to provide the service, and you balance the costs against the revenues, and you come up with a percentage. 35% seems, I don't know of any business, certainly not mine, that has that kind of rate of return.
Madam Chair and Senator Burdick, if that 35% were a net, if we were guaranteed a net after all costs were paid, I would agree that that's exorbitant. But that is 35% gross, and out of that we pay all of the charges associated with being a video lottery retailer. We keep our doors open a certain period of time for the video lottery players, and those video lottery players, for the most part, come in and sit in the corner and play the machines and might have a cup of coffee or a beer or a meal, but those dollars that they put into those machines are not dollars that they used to spend on beer, wine, and food in our establishments. And you can talk all you want about attracting other clients and people who then spend money in your establishment, but you are not getting the same amount of dollars put into your core business of food and beverage than you used to get before video lottery. And that's why the video lottery has become an integral and important, and rightly so, part of businesses of video lottery retailers. We accepted that responsibility of incorporating it into our business plans, and we have done so, and we've done so well to the benefit of both the state and the video lottery retailer.
And to clarify his point, the dollars put in the machine, including payouts and everything else, the lottery and us split 3.2%. I mean, that's where it's what we're talking about. 35% is of the total profit.
Correct. And that's a high percentage. I'll drop this now, Madam Chair. But I just think one of the things we suffer from here is a lack of concrete specification of what we're talking about when we're trying to quantify reasonable rate of return.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming. We appreciate
your
testimony.
Okay.
Next panel, Jacqueline Zimmer, Marcia Kelly, and Martin Taylor. And on deck, Ginny Van Loo and Grover Simmons.
You get to run all the meetings here.
I just heard that.
We discussed.
Hi. I forgot I was Jerry. If you'd introduce, who's going to start first?
Hi.
Jacqueline, you want to introduce yourself for the record, please?
Good afternoon, Madam Co-Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jacqueline Zimmer. I'm the director of the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities. And this is kind of an odd bill for us to come and comment on, but if you're going to talk about gambling, we'd like to talk to you about some odds ourselves. And first of all, we'd just like to mention to you that Human Services really is a place where I would bet my money on, because we have the best odds of all. if you give me $25 million, I can match it with federal and other funds and turn it into $100 million in about 15 minutes. So we're a great bargain. And what I really want to talk about is the issue of fairness to Oregonians. And really, fairness to Oregonians, so far this past year, it's really code language for fairness to some and genuine misery to others. Each time our human services clients get told that times are tough and we must all tighten our belts, those clients also have to swallow the concept that only some people will be tightening their belts. Only probably they will be tightening their belts. For seniors and people with disabilities, there have been over $40 million in belt tightening alone just this year, and that's in general fund. So again, you add the federal match in there, and there's been about $100 million in belt tightening in our programs alone. So we're talking some real money here. And while, you know, I've been a city councilor, I understand economic development, I understand what the lottery is, I remember when it was created, the kind of money that it generates, and who benefits, and how that all trickles down. But, you know, really what we're asking for is that the deck be evenly stacked. When we've been asked so far this year to give up 10, 20, and 30% in our programs, and we've been asked to do that repeatedly, it seems a little bit unfair that commissions to lottery poker and, again, some of the more interesting tax credits that we give haven't been asked to do the same thing. When we've been asked to come down here 9 and 10 and 11 times in a year and bring our clients with us to show you what they look like, I think everybody ought to do that. And, you know, really, what we wouldn't give for a reasonable rate of return. You know what? Quite honestly, we've made a mistake. We have failed to adjust the statutes so that our programs are granted a reasonable rate of return. We have equity issues in our area agencies on aging where we're working for 83 cents on the dollar. You're getting a heck of a deal with our programs. And I don't see people really jumping to correct those kind of reasonable rates of return. We see a tax on provider rates. We see a tax on nursing home rates. So, you know, while I have a lot of empathy for retailers that provide this service and generate this kind of money, I'm hard pressed to sort of come to their aid, because we used to say things like, if you make cuts in these programs, people will die. And now we say, you've made cuts in these programs and people have died. And so sort of lining the two of these up side by side, I just the equity and the fairness of it, it escapes me. So, you know, I'm just here to talk to you a little bit about how if you're going to make reductions in, especially in human services programs, and tighten belts and be fair, then really sort of walk your talk and do that, everywhere, do that across the board.
Marcia?
Jacqueline. If you have questions for Jacqueline, she has another appointment.
Oh, we just made a new rule. No one can leave the room until everybody's through testifying.
Okay.
Any questions?
To testify until the PMA.
That's right. Just correct.
Is that a bend rule?
That's a bend rule.
A bend rule.
Senator Byer, we rule the sunshine, and we also make other rules, too. Marcia, go ahead.
My name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm the lobbyist for the Women's Rights Coalition. I like bend rules. I was born there. Our organizational members include the American Association of University Women of Oregon, with over 2,500 members in the state, the Oregon Women's Political Caucus, the Oregon National Association of Women, Delta Kappa Gamma, the Older Women's League of Oregon, and the Salem YWCA. Our members are from Ontario to Coos Bay, Portland to Medford. We even have an AAUW branch in Lakeview. And I'm going to sort of paraphrase my written testimony. We do support Senate Bill 279. We think that maximizing the lottery revenue is very important to the state of Oregon. And again, I echo some of Jacqueline's concerns about belt tightening and people who have not been asked yet to tighten their belts. We have members who are school teachers, and they spend money out of their pocket to make their classrooms enhanced with creative displays. I know personally two or three teachers in Salem who do that. Should they have to do that because they don't have needed classroom dollars for supplies? No, they shouldn't. We should be funding our schools more. We have members who are small business owners, and we have to work on a very tight budget. I personally owned a business for 10 years that works on commission. Our commission was never more than 10%. I paid more than minimum wage, and I didn't serve anything else. I didn't sell anything else at the same time as I was working for that 10% commission. I think that we need to examine what the reasonable level is for those lottery dollars. We heard a speaker up here talk about, well, because they had the lottery, they had to have ADA requirements. You have to have ADA requirements if you do any sort of remodeling in your business at all. It's mandated. The lottery terminals do not determine that you have to have ADA requirements in your business. We also find it sort of interesting that at the same time the commissions are so high, the program to aid gambling addiction is being eliminated in the budget. I'll leave you with an idea about reasonable return, Senator Burdick. When I was a young college graduate, graduated from Willamette across the street, one of my best friends was the son of a president, a CEO of an international company based in Portland. And I was from a fairly low-income, working-class family, was at Willamette on scholarship, and, of course, I was pretty much corporations are making way too much money, you know. And so Peter took the opposite view. I mean, he was being raised by the CEO in Portland, and so he checked with his dad. And the next week when we were having our conversation, he said, I checked with my dad, and over the last 10 years, Janssen's profit has averaged between 3 and 4%. Now, Janssen Inc., corporate company in Oregon, Bob Roth was on international boards. His company had a 3 to 4% profit margin. We suggest that their whole profit is not in that 35% commission, but it sure does a whole bunch to make their profit line good. We think you ought to check and look at these commissions, and we contend that they're not necessary. We do thank you for having this hearing.
Thank you. Martin Taylor.
For the record, my name is Martin Taylor. I'm here today representing HISCO, which is the Human Services Coalition of Oregon. I also personally represent the Oregon Nurses Association, a group called the Community Providers Association of Oregon, which provides residential housing for developmentally disabled and mentally ill people, and the Oregon Law Center, which represents our legal aid system and helps provide legal help for some of the poorest people in Oregon. To be honest, I'm a little bit stunned to be here. I've never actually testified in favor of taking money out of one part of the budget in hopes that it will go to another part of the budget. I've always thought of that as not the best practice. I'm very comfortable coming to legislators and saying, hey, we've got some human service needs, and you should find some money to meet those needs. But typically the proposition back is, well, where should the money come from? And our position is always to say, really, that's your job to figure out where the money comes from, not ours. And so this is a weird experience for me. And I don't really like the idea of sitting here and telling you that some hardworking small business owners that provide a service that people want should give up part of the way they make their money to work on human service projects, but I think that's where we're at, honestly. The folks that I've been sent here to try to service include the medically needy, folks that are dying as a result of budget cuts and are facing, even in the transplant program and in the HIV program, they're facing a cutoff to those services at the end of this biennium. That's very real to me. It's very real to me that you have folks that are developmentally disabled or mentally ill who are losing services that they depend on both for quality of life and in some cases for life. So here we are. And I would say that we're going to have to make some revenue choices in this process, and some of those are about raising revenue, and those are hard choices. We've been doing a lot of the easier ones, and unfortunately in the category of easy choices, we've done things like defund a lot of our tobacco prevention because there was money sitting in a pot someplace. We're defunding some of our low-income housing because there's money sitting in a pot someplace. In a way, this bill is like that money sitting in a pot someplace. Lottery proceeds are your money. And what you're doing with some of your money is you're contracting with a vendor, in this case a tavern or an eating establishment, to collect that money for you, and you're paying them for that service. But it's all your money. 100% of the lottery proceeds are your money. It's not raising new revenue. This is revenue that's already coming into the state. And the question is, what distinguishes this pot of money from housing or from the pot of money that was for tobacco prevention? And what's different about cutting this supply of money than cutting the supply of money to the medically needy or the Oregon Health Plan or folks that are suffering from mental health or a developmental disability? And I don't see that distinction, so I feel more comfortable here than in some other rooms. I have to tell you that this is a pot of money that also has some characteristics associated with it. A lot of the clients that we service have a relationship to lottery and to drinking establishments. I think most people going to these establishments are making personal choices they can afford to make. But there are people who are gambling addicted, who have an alcohol addiction. There are folks that are needing human services in part because of their relationship to a gambling or a drinking problem. And right now, those are folks that are getting their services cut, including their A&D services and their gambling addiction services. So if you're looking for a place to try to make some choices, this is a logical place to look. And I think that at some level, there is a contribution to poverty that's made in this industry, so it's a fair place to make a relationship. I would also say that at some level, there are a portion of the folks in this industry that don't offer their employees health care. And if those are lower wage employees, there are folks that sometimes become part of the population in the Oregon Health Plan that is losing service right now. They're probably not in your plus population. They're probably in your standard population that you're working poor. And I'm not trying to disparage this industry. I know a lot of these employers offer a good wage. Some of them don't. There's just a relationship, and that makes it more comfortable for me to say this is a place that you should look. And I hope that you consider this bill. I hope that you consider this bill in a way that is putting it on par with all the other tough choices you've got to make. Because to me, that's what the session has come down to. It's come down to a certain level of cannibalism where you have to identify where are you going to get the money. This is a logical place to look.
Thank you, Martin. Any questions? Not. Thank you both very much. Next, we have Grover Simmons and Jenny Van Loop. Jenny, long time no see.
I guess. Mm-hmm. Very nice to see you, too.
Thank you. Are you going to go first?
I guess I will go first.
Okay.
Grover's allowing me to do this because he's going to bat clean up once I get through.
Okay. If you'll put your name on the record, we're glad to have you here today.
Madam Co-Chair and members of the Senate Rules Committee, for the record, my name is Jenny Van Loo, and I'm here today to represent 1,000 members of the Oregon City Elks Lodge. We are a charitable, nonprofit, fraternal organization. I have had the distinct honor of being elected their first woman president since their inception in 1910. And with that honor, you get the ability to operate the entire facility, both lodge and club. So in some ways, I guess I could say I am a club business manager. Senate Bill 279 intends to reduce our video poker commissions by 17%, as you know, from 32 down to 15. To our lodge, what that means is about $10,000 loss in commissions per year. I'd like to take a little different tact on what I'm going to say to you, because you've heard all of the things from the restaurant folks. I mirror all of the things that they said, what it takes to run these things, what you have to do, how you have to keep these machines out of the line of children, and that takes, in some lodges, it takes a little bit of carpentry work and a number of folks to just continue to watch that none of the rules are broken. Our lodge this past year has helped 300 families in our local area eat. We provided 43,000 cans of food to local folks, 300 families, turkeys, the entire Christmas dinner. Along with that, we sponsored a child to the Meadowood Speech and Hearing Camp in Pendleton. That cost us about $1,000 per child, and most recently, we have supplied $13,000 in scholarships to local school children. These funds are all raised through our activities in our lodge and club, most of which are run by volunteers, but obviously we need paid staff. We have 13 citizens in our area that are on our staff, six of which are full-time paid employees with benefits. We have a fairly small budget, and to lose $10,000 right off the top, I can tell you, will reduce what we do in some ways. I'm not sure whether we'll lose employees. It looks as though we will. It's a fairly small operation. There are four or five other lodges right close to ours, so we're in competition on a regular basis. I'd like to share some information with you that I haven't heard today, and it's a very real experience, and I've provided you with the proof. We had Keno in our facility until about a month and a half ago, and to that end, we paid in about $20,000. That's what we paid to the Lottery Commission with our Keno. We got a letter, Valentine's Day, I think it was, that said, you're not meeting your quota, therefore we're going to pull your machines. Well, that was completely a shock. First we'd heard. So we responded to that letter saying that we would like the opportunity to work to get the sales up. I had been down here in Salem and talked to the Lottery Commission sometime before that about doing some promotions, not even knowing we weren't hitting our target. So we wrote a letter that said, please give us some more time, we'll pick up those sales, and away we go. The response we got, and those responses are in your packet, said, that isn't a good enough reason, forget it, we're pulling your machines, and well, they did. So in my view, and it's the opinion of my lodge, obviously the Lottery Commission doesn't need our $20,000 because they pulled the machine. And recently at a state convention where all the Elks Lodges were together, I was in a committee meeting and asked that question, and it was mind-boggling. They almost tore the room down with stories of video poker being pulled, Keno machines being pulled, and that brought me to a question of how much excess equipment have we got sitting somewhere in Salem in a warehouse that perhaps could be generating money. We are not one of your big restaurant retailers. Our total video poker sales in the year are $55,000. We make about $19,000 off of that. We didn't really make that much Keno, but the important part is you folks are here looking for money every day, some way to fund all of these programs that you need to do. And we're sitting here talking now about reducing commissions in lottery when the actual Lottery Commission is coming in taking away a means of generating income. So, to that end, I thought I would provide you with the necessary information backed up by a copy of what all of the Elks Lodges in the state do in business. I heard that there are 31 businesses in Clackamas County that have been treated exactly as we have. They've pulled the machines or said you can make up $15,000, $20,000, $2,000 and keep them if you want to. It's that kind of thing. And with 31 businesses in Clackamas County, if we just took our small number of 20,000, the number gets pretty mind-boggling of what could be coming in that isn't. So I would hope that you would look into what I have just given you, the facts and the figures, and that you would be aware that our average for all of the Elks clubs in the state who do charitable work in every single town almost, our average is about $28,000 a year. It's not $75,000 like it's been printed in the papers. We don't make that much money, and we do an extreme amount of charitable work in our own areas. So I respectfully hope that you will take a look at this, and before you pass this legislation out of committee, take a look at where the dollars really are. I thank you very much for listening, and I'm certainly willing to answer any questions you have.
Ms. Ann Liu and Mr. Simmons, thanks for bringing this issue, and congratulations, I think, on your new position, and it's good to see you.
Thank you.
Could you tell, so you had the machines in your lodge, and I'm not clear, you were short $20.
Per week. There is some type of a minimum, apparently, that you have to have with Keno. I wasn't aware of that until we got the number. When they first came in and offered it to us, there was a number overall for video poker, Keno, and scratch-offs and pull tabs and all of those things.
Were you out of balance, or you just didn't bring in enough money that week?
We didn't bring in
sales.
We didn't bring in enough sales. They wanted $500 a week for Keno alone, and we brought in $479 a week.
Okay.
So we were literally minus $20 a week of what we needed to bring in for them to allow us to keep the machines.
Okay. Other questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Burdick.
Just a comment to both you and the person who was here, Ms. Hunt from the East Bank Saloon. I just think it's really laudable that people in these small businesses and in the Elks are using their commissions to good purposes, providing benefits, you know, supporting their employees, providing, you know, investment in the community. And I just want people to understand that this, you know, we're not about trying to discourage that. And in fact, we're about really appreciating that. It's just a horrible time for everyone, and everyone is being forced to suffer here, to suffer reductions. I mean, we get people show up all the time saying, not I'm going to lose the ability to provide health insurance, but I'm going to die without these drugs. So I just, you know, if this is not about trying to punish small businesses who are doing right by their employees, who are participating in the community charitably, investment-wise, it's just a very, very hard time. We're really struggling here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions for this panel? Thank you. I'm sorry. Mr. Simmons, I'm sorry. Did you wish to testify as well?
Yes, I do,
Madam
Co-Chair. And members of the committee, for the record, my name is Grover Simmons. I represent the Oregon State Elks Association. I just wanted to get a couple of figures into the record so you could have those for your deliberations. First of all, there are 58 Elks lodges throughout the state, but only 45 have video poker machines in them. And in order to get a handle on the activities, the video poker activities throughout the state, I asked the lottery administration to provide me with a printout of what each lodge is doing. So you have a copy of that in this portfolio that it was handed out to you. And if you'll turn to the very last page of that handout, it will reflect two numbers of interest. That the total sales for all of these 45 lodges throughout the state for a one-year period, and that's from December 30th of 01 to December 28th of 02, but it's the most current information that we have, was $3,672,667. So we're talking about $3.6 million for the state as a whole. The total commissions for these 45 lodges was $1,271,655. And the key figure, obviously, is an average, $28,259. So the Oregonian newspaper regularly publishes articles on this topic. As you all know, the most recent was last Sunday. The lead editorial in the Oregonian has emphasized again the average video poker tavern rakes in $75,000 a year in video commissions. So the phraseology is of some concern to me. The $75,000 figure is practically embedded in our culture. If you read the newspapers regularly, the $75,000 figure is used repeatedly and repeatedly. Well, just for the record, the Lottery Commission certifies to us that the average commission in the Elks is $28,259. So I wanted to get, that's the first point. Only three of our lodges out of the 45 reach the $75,000 or more. And that would be Hood River, Lebanon, and Beaverton Lodge. Only those three are subject to the criticism of $75,000 or more. So The newspaper makes a second point down here. The 32% average lottery commissions were a sweet deal for the retailers during the good times in Oregon. They are indefensible now. Well, again, I think it's inflammatory language. I may have a disagreement on that, but a sweet deal is not necessarily incorporated in an average of $28,000 a year. So if you were to reduce it to the 15% commission rate as proposed by the bill, that would really mean a 53.12% reduction in the commission. 53%. So you take the $28,259 and reduce that by 53.1%, the average annual income would be reduced by $15,011. To a balance, we would really be to a new average, if you will, of $13,248 a year. So if you divide that by 52, you get $254.77. So we'll say $255 a week. Now, I'm sorry that Senator Burdick isn't here, because I don't think that that is an unreasonable... I think that it would be an unreasonable expectation for these lodges to maintain this system for what would be $255 a week. So that's the first set of points I wanted to get in. The last point deals with some other material that was in this, again, this portfolio. And those of you who came to the Elks reception at the beginning of the year got all these materials early on. And so this was leftover material, but it had one page in there that I wanted to use today. And that shows the contributions that the Elks make back into the Oregon Society. And on that page, it shows a figure of $1,725,531 in cash that the Elks contribute to back to the public. There is a non-cash item and I of $729,000 more. And I asked, well, what is that? They said, well, once in a while we buy a fire truck, we give it to a community, or we contribute medical equipment to the KCI Institute and so forth. But anyway, I just used the $1,007,000 for a cash contribution. So if we receive from the lottery $1,271,000 total commissions for the state, and we contributed $1,725,000 in cash, we have really contributed $453,876 more in cash than we earned on the entire lottery operation. I think that's a pertinent and relevant figure. Nobody in the Elks movement is making money off of this, and I just wanted to make that point. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks. We appreciate you bringing this issue forward to us. Are there any questions for this panel? With that, given the late hour and the fact that it's Thursday, we are going to adjourn the public hearing on Senate Bill 279 and adjourn the Rules Committee for today. Thanks for joining us.